Hello and welcome to the What's Current podcast, where we discuss all things electrical. On the show, we have me, Andrew Duffin, commercial engineer, technical engineer at Napier, and we're joined by Gareth Butler, who's a relationship manager from ACO. Gareth, are you okay this morning?
I'm good, thank you very much, yeah.
Not too bad, not too bad for this time of the morning, but we'll get through it, eh?
That's it.
So, I suppose, Gareth, if you don't mind, could you give our listeners just an overview of your background, your role at ACO and ACO itself. I'm guessing most of the listeners have heard of ACO, but if they haven't, just tell us a bit about the brand and what it does.
Yeah, no problem at all. So, start with myself. Started electrician, did an apprenticeship back in, or way back now, 1998, so showing my age a bit. Local authority, predominantly doing domestic, but with some commercial works as well. Did that until around about 2018 when I stepped into the office, a bit of a management role, engineers, okay. Apprentices, qualifying supervisor for a scheme. Then a couple of years doing that, then I got promoted again, ended up being project manager, so running things like EICR programs, you know, silica work, rewire streams, so just everything really that the local authority did. Then an opportunity arose to join ACO, you know, such a strong brand, couldn't really say no to it, so stepped outside my comfort zone, sort of took on a completely new role, but really enjoy it, you know. So ultimately now at ACO, as you mentioned, I am a relationship manager. So what is that? Basically means I've got an area, so I cover postcodes DY, WV, WS, ST and TF. And I sort of look after everything on that area with regards to ACO. So whether it be specification for end clients, providing training to contractors, local authority staff, private landlords, homeowners, you know, small electrical contracts, large nationals, whoever it may be, we sort of support the entire supply chain. So that includes the electrical distribution network as well. So that's, we're really there to provide as much support as we can and is as needed. ACO as a company, a very strong presence within smoke detection, you know, really quality life safety products. We're based in Oswestry. We've got 32 people across the United Kingdom who do the role that I do. They're supported by a wider team of regional directors, national account managers, you know, so real strong support in the network. All our products are made by EI Electronics, which is our group that is based in Shannon Island. And why is ACO such a strong brand? Well, we test everything. Every single device is tested at least four times before it leaves our factory facility.
So, yeah, it's got like that high quality mark against it, hasn't it, I suppose, what you're saying there.
It has. I mean, ultimately, they're life safety devices. We hope they'll never be needed, but we want to ensure that if they are needed, they're reliable and robust enough to continue operating for that 10-year lifespan of the product.
Right. Okay, I get you. And how long has ACO been around as a brand? I mean, I remember installing ACO. I mean, I started my apprenticeship at a similar time to you, Gareth. I was a 1998 apprentice as well. So I seem to remember them since 1998 to be installing them. So I guess they've been around for a while.
Yeah, so ACO as a brand have been around over 30 years now. Whereas if you look at EI Electronics, the factory, they've been actually manufacturing for 60 plus years. So real long heritage of, you know, creating detection products.
Wow, that's some serious time, isn't it? And I suppose over that period of time, they've obviously changed from what it originally started at to what it is now. I imagine the smoke alarm or heat detectors have come on quite a while since then.
Yeah, the technology in them is quite staggering, really. You know, things like using audio leaks, you can download everything that's occurred with that device. So has it triggered? How many times has the lost supply or the base been removed from its base? So real, you know, interesting stuff that goes into the devices. We're old enough to remember them when they weren't round, and that's you know, keep getting down off your steps and eyeing them up. But yeah, so yes. a lot of changes over the years.
I think that was the best change. what we'll do, we'll go into a bit about the regs now. So how well aligned are the fire safety regs and our wiring regs, our BS7671? Are they aligned? Are there gaps that our installers, electricians need to be aware of?
Yeah, it's a good question. That is a good question. They are aligned. So bearing in mind the first edition of the wiring regulations came about to prevent fire arising from electrical lighting fires. So they sort of do go hand in hand. If any installer best bit of advice to say is take a look at 7671 section 5. There's a regulation number 560.10, and that states that fire detection and fire alarm systems shall comply with the relevant parts of the BS5839 series. So that is one of those, you know, you've got to comply sort of regulations.
Yeah.
So I'd say that really does hammer home the relationship between the two standards. You know, so there is two parts to 5839. We have part one for commercial properties, and then we have part six for domestic installs. So
right.
ACO products would fall under a part six installation. We are a domestic product. Probably say the gap to be aware of for installers is, and it's not, you know, the lack of experience or anything, it's just lack of awareness of the requirements of 5839.
Yeah,
it doesn't always get taught at college, and you know,
I've definitely not. I mean, I've got a background in teaching, I've never taught it as well. I don't know it that well. I know of it, but in depth knowledge, I wouldn't have.
So, it's not a massive document, but it's got some, you know, real crucial regulations, obviously, because it's a British standard. So what we do at ACO is we look to support the community with this. We actually train up and down the country around about 12,000 people every year.
Wow.
That's through our expert installer program. So that's a CPD course. We've just amended it actually, so now it gives you 120 minutes worth of CPD. That is totally free of charge. And from that, we've also got a City and Guilds course. It's an assured AA 242601 course that's run from our head office in Oswestry. And again, it's totally free of charge. So if you're unsure of the requirements or the link between 7671 5839, come and have a conversation with us. Come and sit, have a bit of free training. We'll educate you on the requirements of the things like the standard building regs and law.
That's really helpful, I think. I mean, there's no excuses now. Like you said, it's free. It's available. You just got to reach out, haven't you, and be more aware and get your CP done on those topics. And I think that's really good from you guys from ACO. I think that's really going to help the industry to fill those gaps.
Yeah, there's always gaps in knowledge. Things are changing at such a fast pace now. I mean, look how many amendments we're having within 7671 now. So CPD is essential just to keep track of what's going on, because the regulations can only change so quickly. So, you know, we do need to do that CPD to keep up to speed with other things.
Okay, so with the growth of renewable technologies with PV and solar and battery storage systems, what are the added considerations that are required with fire alarm systems? What are we coming across? What questions are you coming across, Gareth, in that area?
Yeah, so we did get a couple of questions on there, really. So like a sort of another area of questions we get is about just compatibility. So when we talk about compatibility, it's actually like different devices. So I think a lot of people look at smoke alarms and they think, oh, they're all the same. Well,
right,
they're not, you know. So if you're gonna use ACO, you should use ACO. So we'd say, you know, you can't go and fit another manufacturer's within the loft space and think it's going to trigger ours, because it hasn't been tested as such, you know.
Right.
I think the best way to probably talk about it is the same way as like mixing RCBOs and MCBs within the consumer unit.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You should stick to what's been type tested by the manufacturer for that enclosure. And it's exactly the same with our products. You know, we've tested our products alongside other of our products, so we know they trigger.
Yes.
We'd never reliably say that it would be able to trigger another device or be triggered by something as such. So yeah, when you're adding in those other devices, just ensure, you know, you've got a system that's going to work together, be compatible.
Yes. So compatible, and I suppose that makes more sense definitely with the wireless ones, the ones that work off radio frequency. Obviously they're two different brands, they're not going to talk to each other, let alone a hardwired system, but the radio frequency ones, you've definitely got no chance, have you?
Exactly that. So yeah, we've got a unique frequency that our RF operates on, and then like I say, as we house code, we actually amend that RF frequency to make it unique to that installation. So we can't say, we don't know what other manufacturers use for their frequency. So again, no compatibility. So just ensure it's compatible, because ultimately, you know, you do want it to trigger on activation as you intended, you know, design the system to do. So yeah, that's just another consideration that may be overlooked at times.
I suppose when it's a new install, that's quite straightforward. It's when you're adding to existing property, or, you know, that's where your complications come across.
It is. And actually bringing up adding in, so another thing to look at is look at the age of the devices. You know, are they due to expire? They may even have expired. Does the homeowner know that they only last for a certain time period? So, just give everything a good look over where you're adding into systems. Check it's still in date and working in good working order, you know, test it before to adding yours in, and then you make any amendments or changes as required.
That perfect. I think that's cleared that up. So for installers that work in domestic properties, what are the key requirements for fire alarm systems then? Because obviously your product is predominantly for domestic and residential installations.
Yeah, we are. So really it comes down to like the grade of detector that should be used and the category of system alongside that fire risk assessment. So when we look at the categories, so everybody should be familiar with LD3, LD2 and LD1. So okay. LD3 is the lowest form of detection. It is just devices that would be found within areas that form part of an escape route. So you know, your typical domestic property, you probably are just looking at hall and landings.
That would be an LD3 then.
That's an LD3, yeah. So just be aware when you install into an LD3, it's not always just those areas. So, you know, because it is an area that forms part of an escape route, if you have to come down the stairs, go through a living room, for instance, to get out of the property, that living room then would form part of your escape route and should be protected as such. So,
yeah,
you know, sometimes it's more than just the two detectors. You know, we have seen 3 and 4 have to be used at times. But again, just give us a call. We can, you know, our technical team are on hand. They can video call to talk you through, you know, what you should be doing. Where the sort of standard really sits now for any new installations is an LD2. So LD2 is everything that the LD3 does.
Right.
But it sort of looks at other high-risk locations. So unsurprisingly, the room that causes the most amount of fires in the United Kingdom is the kitchen. Yep. So we look to put a heat detector within that location. And then we look at the second highest location for fires, and that is actually what's called a principal habitable room. You and me might call it a living room, okay?
Glad you cleared that one up.
Yeah. But the reason it's called a principal habitable room is because it may not be the living room. You know, it's the room that's most frequently used. So in modern living, it could be any room. It could be a number of rooms at the same time.
Well, I've got to say it depends on the size of your house, doesn't it, realistically there? You know,
yeah, well, I mean, all the money you're on your house, you know, it's probably about 7 rooms, isn't it?
Yeah, I mainly live on the east wing, to be fair.
Yeah, but I mean, just think like things like dining rooms or second living areas, and even, you know, kids spend a lot of time in their bedrooms now, so it may be a number of locations. And interestingly, 30% of fatal fires occur within a bedroom. You know, that's where the fire starts, so it's, you know, it's quite stronger stats there. And we are seeing a number of clients, particularly in Scotland, they are covering bedrooms voluntarily because of the risk. Northern Ireland are actually consulting on taking their building regs to LD2 plus or other habitable rooms, so bedrooms, dining rooms, right. So giving that high level of protection based around fire risk.
So it wouldn't be uncommon to, I mean, an LD1 would be, I'm guessing, a smoke detector room in most rooms, in every room in a house, pretty much, predominantly, I'm guessing.
Yeah, so LD1 is that full coverage. So it's all habitable rooms and areas of risk. So, you know, garages, if you've got a plant room where all your consumer units, things like that are, you just cover every location. So you're going to be talking a lot of detectors, but that would be to address any potential risk. So we do see a lot of local authorities cover their high-rise stock with that level of protection. We are expecting the standard to be revised probably next year. It's typically revised every 5 years. So it was, you know, 2019, 2020, there was an amendment. So we are probably due a revision. I'd imagine we're going to see a lot more LD1s coming into the standard. So just something to be aware of as well.
Yeah, I'm trying to get my installer head on here. If I'm doing, I guess from what you've told me, if I'm doing new build or social housing, I'm guessing the minimum I've got to put in is an LD2 system or an LD1, depends on the spec and the client. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And if I was doing, say, rewires, for argument's sake, would I have to put an LD3 would be the minimum, but ACO would recommend an LD2 system in place?
Yeah, so we just look at what the British standard says. So because there's that link between 7671, we do go to that's, you know, you shall comply. So if you're doing a new install, a rewire, or installing detection, we have to look at Table 1 within 5839 Part 6. Table 1 says for any new or materially altered property, It must be an LD2 system, and then the variation is the grade of detector. So where we have an owner-occupied property, we could use a grade D2 alarm. So that's a 230 volt supply to the device, and it has a 9 volt user replaceable battery as its backup. And then for any rental property, that should be a grade D1. So it's a very similar alarm. It's still 230 volts. The difference being this time the battery is tamper-proof. So it's within the unit, it's sealed. You'll never replace it. It's going to last that 10-year period. And it's ultimately the standard based around the stats. The mains powered with battery backup are a more reliable detector. There's fewer fires where there's one of those devices installed than any other type of device.
I always remember the 9 volt battery. It bleeps, doesn't it, when it's on its sort of last legs when it's run out, isn't
That's
it? And
it, yes.
it was a common maintenance call from a team. We had to go and
Yeah.
replace batteries. It was a common one. So I'm glad they did change that to a lithium battery, as you've spoke about.
Yeah. So you can still use those 9 volts, but as you mentioned, you get that potential nuisance triggering. But anytime an alarm bleeps, it's not because it's faulty. It's trying to say to the end user, look, there's something wrong, whether it be, the chamber could be contaminated with dust or a low battery. It's just an indication that something may not be performing right on their
I
device.
think we used to remember, we used to get a lot of that calls at Christmas. I think people used to pinch the batteries out of their alarms,
That's it.
for the kids' toys, as
In the remote control.
So yeah,
Yeah.
that was a common one. So
I mean, ultimately, those devices, if they're bleeping, they're at risk that the end user could tamper and potentially disable the alarm. So the more reliable we can make them, putting a better battery in, yes, it may be an increased cost, but there's no batteries to replace over the life. It's going to get less interaction by the end user, so ultimately providing a good level of protection there.
Well, as you said, these are lifesavers, aren't they? And you can't really put a price on saving a life, can you?
Yeah, that's it.
You really can't. And I'm glad you talked about LD1, LD2, and LD3, because I think that's an area where installers might have a bit of lack of knowledge, understanding of it. And is that available on your website, like some imagery of where that would be? Just so sometimes talking about it, we like a visual, don't we, as installers? It makes it a bit crystal clear what we need to do.
Yeah, that's it. If they go and look onto our website, there's a number of guides and publications. As I said, we have actually got an app, the Handybook app. So we do a book that we'd give out at training. You can also get that as a downloadable app. So that's got loads of pictures, devices that you could use, things like that. So it's a really good source of information to have at hand. Ultimately, give us a call. We're here. That's what we're here for. We can send over snippets from the website if you need them. But yeah, just that, I think, to get the understanding of what you should be installing and where, because between the legislation, building regulations and the standard, there is discrepancies. But the one thing that is consistent is that all documents signposted back to the British standard. So that is, everybody installing should always install in line with the British standard. So that's where we sort of use that one source of information.
And when they obviously install these and commission them, is there some kind of like documentation that ACO provides as a certification that would say this has been installed to an LD1, LD2, etc., that they can download from you, or
Yeah, that's yeah. So when you do any install electrical, there's certification to complete it. And exactly the same for smoke fire detection. So there's some model forms contained within 5839 Part 6. As part of that Handybook app, we do also have a document that you can create into a PDF. So we'd just say, on commissioning the installation, everything's going to be in working order. So you've pressed the test button on every device and held it for 10 seconds, ensuring they trigger and it sounds all other detectors. We'd re recommend you do that with the supply on and the supply off. So you're testing both power sources to do that. You don't have to use synthetic smokes with our devices. It is a simple push the test button that does stimulate a full activation. So don't use canned smoke because it could potentially contaminate the device. There's no requirement. We
I
do get that question a lot because like a lot of part one installers, you have to use synthetic
get
smoke.
you. Definitely in a commercial, in industrial area, you would have to use those. But obviously, your devices are for more domestic settings. It's just a simple hold the button in, and then make sure all the alarms sound on there.
So on the certification, we just put that as a deviation. You've tested in line with manufacturer's instructions. Manufacturer's instructions will always supersede the requirements of the regulations. And so, yes, you state what system you've put in. There are other forms where you can highlight what detector is in which location, so you can build up a real good insight of what's been installed. And then, as I mentioned, alluded to audio link earlier, so you could take an actual report from every device in the property, build up a picture of what's fitted. That'll link all serial numbers of the device to that room that you've said it's in. And that'll just really show a really good audit trail of what's been fitted. Everything's in good working order. You know, that's, again, downloadable as a PDF. So you could attach that to your commissioning certificate, and you've got a real good pack of information. So when we talk about data and, you know, certification is key, you've got it all together in one place.
I suppose it we're all used to doing handwriting certificates now. We've got to move with the times and downloadable apps, and it does it all for it. It's there to help us, isn't it? And to give more data, capture that data, and it's very important, isn't it?
It is. You know, obviously, we are in the world where sort of data and evidence is key. So if you need to evidence that what you fitted and, you know, at that time everything was sufficient and installed correctly, good working order. So why not evidence that?
Yeah, I totally agree. You can't catch all the data handwriting it. So yeah, I think the app sounds marvellous and something our listeners should look into on there. Looking ahead, Gareth, what advances or updates do you foresee in fire safety requirements in the domestic setting with smart or renewable systems that are coming more popular nowadays?
Okay, so I think first we'll look at the level of protection before we get into like smart technology. So, you know, fire detection has always become more stringent. You know, it always requires more locations covering. So we suspect in future editions of the British Standard, we're probably going to see a wider use of LD1s as a category potentially. But just that the risk is great. We are seeing an increase in fires occurring. You know, we've all seen in the news e-scooters and e-bikes, how many fires they're causing, and lithium batteries, you know, when they do go, they are quite significant fires and a lot of toxic gas. So
well, more people are having, like you said, renewable technologies in the house, and there are increased risks of fires with those technologies, isn't there? So it does make sense.
Exactly that. So when we look at like sort of smart technology, where is that going to go? We've got devices, like Internet of Things enabled devices already that are out there. So, you know, if you're using the RF modules, they will connect to our gateway, which got a roaming SIM card in it. And then on activation, whether it be fire, CO, a head removal, a battery issue, loss of supply, anything like that, it can actually report on that. So we can get that information off-site via a text or email alert, depending how it's been set up. If we look to sort of then other future things, and an area of growth for us as a business is, you know, we develop a lot of sensors. We're now actually doing environmental monitoring, so we're measuring things like temperature, humidity, and carbon dioxide levels, and that's to give insights into things like fuel poverty, damp and mold. You know, and we're seeing a big uptake of that through obviously damp and mold.
Really hot topic at the moment, isn't it? It's definitely in our properties in the UK. Yeah.
Definitely, you know, we are a damp, wet country at times, unfortunately, mainly over the summer months. But so it just gives a landlord the ability to monitor their properties and become proactive. So is there a risk of damp and mold developing? Well, hopefully the landlord will have kit in there, get an alert, and you can make changes to the property before it develops a damp and mold that will ultimately cause the residents some issues.
I think it's good because, you know, we do have a lot of rental properties in the UK, and that's another conversation. But for landlords who are looking after those properties, they need that information of these fire risks or someone tampering or a battery or whatever the case may be, and they can get a notification via email or text and know what smoke detector is and what location and what property it is. So it's valuable information, that is.
Yeah, it's valuable for compliance, and we are seeing, you know, a big uptake in that technology. And electricians, electrical contractors at the forefront of that, they'll be the ones who are installing this equipment. So again, we offer training on that, so reach out if you want to have a closer look at it so you understand what it is, if in case there's any conversations that take place about installing it. And a big area of growth for that sort of equipment is actually through retrofit work. So we're seeing large government grants through mechanisms like SHDF. There's another wave three is coming for next year, where there's a serious amount of cash that's available for local authorities and housing providers to upgrade their housing stock. So, you know, EWI works, changing heating supplies, air source, things like that. But part of the documentation, PAS 2035, which is the standard for retrofit, talks about monitoring of the environment. So, you've monitored it before you've changed any works, you've got an understanding of how the building's performing. You make the retrofit works, you continue to monitor. Has that building now got better or worse? And you can
Has
see
it made
that.
any improvements? Yeah, I
Yeah,
get you.
we've also got the ability to link into smart meters, so we can pull energy data direct from the smart meter
Wow.
network. So that's,
Wow, wow.
when we're looking at performance of buildings, to have actual real-time energy data is a real big benefit.
Yeah.
And it's sort of using the gateways and those sort of devices, sort of future-proofs the property. So, we're going to have future things such as a tech-enabled care solution. Environmental monitors, tech-enabled care, fire detection, they'll all be under that umbrella and connected through the gateway. So the gateway is our central hub for everything we're going to launch in the future.
So it seems quite data driven at the moment, which is like we spoke about earlier in the show. It's vital, isn't it, for people that own these premises that they get this data. But for the installers, we've got to install that for them, haven't we? So yeah, definitely good growth areas for everyone.
Exactly that. Yes, it's another potential revenue stream for contractors, isn't it? The more they can install while they're in the property, the better for them as business. But also, it's doing the right thing. It's providing insights into people's homes that we're trying to ultimately make a healthy home.
Yeah, and safer.
Exactly.
Perfect. I suppose that the next thing is obviously you've alluded to it, but how do our installers, our listeners, get in contact with ACO, yourself, if they've got any questions or any follow-ups, or they'll want to book some CPD training with you guys down at ACO?
Yeah, so first point of call is go onto our website. You can find your local relationship manager. You can reach out to them. All our contact details are on the website. Our office, there's people in that office ready to answer any questions, taking calls, a lot of calls every day we receive. Or they can pop into their local wholesaler, have a conversation with the branch manager or the counter staff. They'll put you in touch. We do a lot of training within wholesalers so they can set
Right.
something up. So yeah, whichever route is easiest, we'll be
Okay.
there to support.
So there's plenty of options. Local wholesaler, reach out to ACO on there for yourselves on there. Because I know you've got that mobile transportable unit, hasn't it? That's what goes to the wholesalers, doesn't it? That goes up and down the country, doesn't it? Because I've had some training myself in.
Yeah, you have.
Yeah. And so that's a handy way of doing it, I suppose, for installers. Because you have those quite a bit, that trade days at the wholesalers, is
Yeah,
that what
we
they're
do.
called?
So the mobile units, we've actually got four of those that are traveling up and down the country. So
Wow.
tends to be from March to around November time. We do take it off the road over winter, just do any maintenance, things like that. But yeah, if somewhere hasn't got a meeting room or facility to train, then we can bring the training room to you, sort of thing. That's what they're there for. So that
Perfect.
does help get the message across the country.
Perfect. I think that's it. So, right then. So that wraps up today's episode. I've hope you enjoyed it. I have. I think Gareth's been great as always. Very knowledgeable in the fire alarm system areas. Don't forget to subscribe. Leave a review. Until next time, stay safe, stay grounded, and keep that current flowing. Cheers, everyone.